From the studios at Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudette. You're listening to Idaho Matters. The Food and Drug Administration earlier this week approved a vaccine for pregnant people in order to protect their babies from RSV. Joining us today to talk more about this is Dr. David Pate, former CEO of St. Luke's Health System. And remember, if you have public health questions for us, send us an email, idahomatters@boisestate.edu. Hi, Dr. Pate.
Hi, Gemma.
So, Dr. Pate, let's just begin with what RSV is for folks who may not really be that familiar with it.
Sure. So, RSV is a virus, and RSV stands for respiratory syncytial virus. And so it is a common respiratory virus, and it does have some seasonality to it, like many respiratory viruses. So we do tend to see RSV surge in the winter and in the late fall and during the winter months. And RSV is something that doesn't typically produce a significant illness, a very serious illness in people that are older children, like adolescents or up to middle-aged adults, but it can cause very serious illness in young children, those generally under five, especially those under two, and even more so newborns. It can create a very serious illness, and also in the elderly. And every year, there are tens of thousands of elderly admitted with RSV because of the breathing problems it causes. The reason it's a particular problem for children is, and especially these young children, is it's very contagious. And it in young children whose respiratory systems haven't fully developed yet, we're talking about infants now, especially those that are breastfeeding, they may have trouble breastfeeding because when they're doing that, they're not able to breathe very well because their nose is clogged up, and they can get a illness called bronchiolitis that can land them in the hospital, can require breathing assistance, and sadly, does take the life of some children every year.
Yeah, I have to say, Dr. Pate, I mean, one of my children had RSV at literally 6 weeks old. I had a spring baby and I had a winter baby. And that winter baby who was born in November, got RSV, and it is scary. So with that said, let's talk about this vaccine that pregnant people can now get. And why is this important?
Well, it's very important because most listeners will recall that usually when we're talking about immunizations, we say generally they're for 6 months and older. Well, why not for less than 6 months? And the reason is infants' immune systems are not developed to the point yet where they can make good immune responses. And so the way that infants under 6 months are protected is actually from their mother. And so the maternal antibodies that the mother has can be transferred across the placenta to the baby. And those can last for 3 to 6 months to help get the baby past that period of time. So since we can't vaccinate the baby for RSV, this is a very clever approach where what we do is we vaccinate the mother. And we vaccinate the mother during the latter part of the pregnancy, especially in a case like yours, Gemma, where you're due to deliver in November. And we know that baby is going to be here right as RSV is taking off. For those that are going to have a anticipated delivery date this fall, it's perfect. We can just vaccinate the mother. And what it's shown is that it's probably at least 80% effective for that first 3 months and still gives some protection for the rest of that RSV season. So this is a really great approach. This is not the first vaccine that we have done this strategy where we vaccinate the mother in the late stages of pregnancy so that it can protect the baby. We do that with the diphtheria and pertussis vaccine.
So with that said, Dr. Pate, do we know around the time that a pregnant person should get this vaccine? Like, is it in that third trimester of pregnancy?
Well, I'm sure it will be, but this is, you remember last week I was expressing my frustration with the new CDC director that we don't have guidance yet for the new COVID vaccines. We don't have guidance from the CDC on this yet. And so it's very frustrating. And, you know, some of us are worried about if we're going to have the guidance even in time for this RSV season, which I just think is just a terrible state of affairs because the committee isn't scheduled to meet till the end of October. So, but yes, what we're anticipating when that advice does come from the CDC's committee and the CDC director is that it's likely to be somewhere after 27 weeks of pregnancy and that they would get vaccinated. But we don't have the official guidance yet.
Okay. So I want to switch gears completely now, Dr. Pate, and talk about malaria because there was what's being called a locally acquired case of malaria. This one is in the Washington, D.C. area. And health officials, I believe, reported this out on Friday. So what do we need to know about this and explain what this locally acquired means? Because I think that's the part that was surprising to me, because when I think of malaria, I think of people, you know, traveling somewhere and getting it.
Well, you're right to think that because we largely eliminated malaria from the United States back in 1951. And so that was a huge success for us. So this is the first case in Maryland or the Washington, D.C. area, like you said, in 40 years that they've had. And we do see malaria in the United States. We see a couple thousand cases a year. But like you said, they're all international travelers who have gone somewhere and brought the infection back with them. And you don't have to worry because you cannot spread malaria directly. You're not going to infect somebody if you have malaria. You have to get bitten by a mosquito carrying the parasite to get infected. But we see a couple thousand cases a year, but they're all international travelers. And then what happened is back in May, we saw seven cases that, as you said, were locally acquired in Florida and one in Texas. And now we have this one. So what it means to say that it was locally acquired means these people didn't travel. They didn't go somewhere where they could have acquired malaria. They got infected while here in the United States. And in fact, this latest case that you're mentioning hadn't traveled to Texas or Florida either. So it appears that it is it's present in those states. Now, these are a small number of cases. This is certainly not a reason for panic or concern, but it is reason for us to begin our public health response of looking and educating, making sure doctors are aware to look for this because we don't ordinarily think about it in people who haven't traveled. The other thing that is a little bit concerning to me is there are five different types of malaria, and the kinds that were in Florida and Texas are typically causing milder disease, whereas the one that was identified most recently in the Washington, D.C. area is the most serious kind called falciparum. And how severe your malaria is, if you get malaria, is generally what percent of your red blood cells are parasitized or infected by the parasite. That correlates to how serious the disease can be. In most people, what happens, you get this insect bite, you get the malaria anywhere from a week to a month, although it has been reported as long as 3 months later, then you begin having symptoms and typically high fever, chills, muscle aching, You can get GI symptoms like diarrhea, vomiting, but it typically comes on suddenly that period of time later. In severe cases, it can actually cause you to be severely ill in the hospital, liver failure, kidney problems, blood breaking up, and what we call hemolyzing. And you can have altered mental status and confusion. So there's a lot of things that can occur. That is more common to happen with this type that was identified in the Maryland area, the falciparum. But again, that's one case. Certainly no reason for concern or panic, but we just need to be aware. We need to monitor this. We need to make sure doctors are aware. If it does become a significant problem, then we'll go back to some of those eradication strategies that we used back in the 40s and 50s when we got rid of malaria with insecticides and treatment where people wear longer, you know, clothes covering their skin, DEET, insect repellent, those kinds of things.
And Dr. Payne, I do want to talk a little bit more about this new subvariant of COVID. We talked quite a bit about it last week, but you know, are we going to see a surge? And the only reason I ask this is that I sure am seeing a lot more people with COVID right now than I have in quite a long time.
Well, I think we are already seeing a surge. Now, let me qualify, because we don't have a really good definition of what a surge is. When I say surge, what I mean is that there is a statistically significant increase in cases, and it's not transient. It's persisting. And I think by my definition, yes, we're having a surge. Now, that doesn't mean that it's going to be the same thing that we saw back in 2020 and 2021 and early 2022. I'm certainly not expecting that this is going to overwhelm our hospitals, those kind of things. But we are having a significant rise in cases. And we can tell that because we can see it in the wastewater. Last week, I mentioned that with the latest data we had for the Boise wastewater, I hadn't really seen it yet. Now we've got updated data, I can see it. But remember, you know, that data itself is going to be 2, 3, 4 weeks old. So it's going to be different now. And I think the signs are it's increasing, because not only do we see it in the wastewater, and we see this nationally, it's not just one area, but also we see increased hospitalizations, not shocking or overly concerning, but yeah, there are more hospitalizations, and we have seen a slight increase in COVID deaths. So I don't think this is going to be of the magnitude of what we saw, but the factor that why I need a little bit more time to determine what is going to happen with this is that schools just started. And that, I think, is a big factor, because there is the potential for now, with kids in school, without mitigations, that they could significantly increase the transmission. So we just got to watch. I won't know the answer to that for a couple of weeks now, but that is part of the concern. The other concern is that particular variant you're talking about is what we call EG.5. We have a brand new variant out there that's causing a little bit more concern among scientists, because it's BA.2.86. And the reason for the concern is it has a very significant increase in the number of mutations. And we have seen it in 4 countries now, Israel, Denmark, the UK, and the US. We had the first case, I believe it was up in Michigan. And it's concerning because of the number of mutations. It's concerning because of how quickly it appears to have emerged very recently. And that's because we can look at the sequences from these different countries, and there's very little divergence, which means it hasn't had much time. And the other thing is, to have it in all of these different countries is really concerning, that and these are people that didn't have a history of travel. So it's suggesting there may be community spread already and that it's kind of getting established internationally. So we're just going to have to watch it way too early to make any predictions about it, but it's got our concern.
All right. Well, as always, Dr. Pate, really appreciate your time and your perspective on all of this. And remember, folks, if you have a public health question for Dr. Pate, send us an email, idahomatters@boisestate.edu. Dr. Pate, thanks so much.
My pleasure, Gemma.
Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudet. We'll see you tomorrow.
Want to learn how to be a master of business without going back to school? Listen to the Planet Money MBA. No suits, no PowerPoints, just the secrets of business school delivered straight to your ears. Every Wednesday till Labor Day on Planet Money from NPR.